So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Nick Barlow of Small Batch Coffee. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well, sir. Now, Nick, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and a bit about the work that you do?
Okay, well, I've been working for Small Batch Coffee down here in Brighton full-time, probably since about 2011, and doing various odd jobs for a couple of years before then. And nowadays, design and social media marketing and basically all the online stuff for the company, and alongside more odd jobs as well.
Okay. And so one of the reasons I asked, we met at a local networking debate type come event, and I just think Small Batch is a great local startup story, but you're also growing at a fair pace. I mean, and particularly in a crowded market, you know, what with all the big chains. I mean, what is it you think that you're doing that differently that's making you stand out, do you think?
Well, I think the timing, we had timing on our side. We got into the coffee roasting market sort of relatively early, so in 2006. And like third wave coffee was sort of really just about to take off, or was taking off around then. And it's really grown and grown. So I mean, nowadays there's loads of artisan coffee roasters all around the country. But so we kind of established by the time that people were getting switched onto what, you know, proper coffee really. And then, I mean, as we started to grow the retail side of the business, both of the founders, Brad and Al, Brad Jacobson and Alan Tomlin, they worked in the cafes often full time, which meant that the kind of the friendly family kind of service that they'd always provided at the original tiny little Small Batch was replicated, and people who worked alongside them and then went on to be managers saw kind of the, you know, the way they wanted it to be done. And I think, you know, when you see your boss working really hard, it kind of, it's easier to do that yourself. And I mean, we import our own coffee and roast our own coffee and visit, you know, visit farmers as often as we can, well, our roasters do. And so it's got that sort of, we've got that traceable provenance.
Right.
You know, we sell coffee that we bought from farmers that we know and have visited, and then we roast it ourselves. And then, you know, it's a real from bean to cup kind of thing.
Right.
Which has, you know, got a lot more authenticity, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, compared to, say, a chain or even just a small independent cafe, which there's loads of great cafes in Brighton, but there's only us and one other company who actually roast their own coffee.
Right. Okay. Now, I mean, the other thing I was thinking was, well, I think, and something else we chatted about was that how, whether you think that, like, say, the craft brewery or craft brewing industry, are you benefiting from I feel like a change in, I feel like, consumer preferences and behavior, where they're looking for more sort of niche providers? I mean, do you think that you benefited from that as well?
Definitely. You know, I mean, it's we've been sort of riding that wave all the way through. It's as more and more people get switched on to decent coffee and realize that, you know, there's more to life than the sort of the Starbucks or Cafe Nero's, and there's all kinds of different ways of, you know, tasting delicious coffee and finding out exactly where it's from and meeting the people who've actually roasted it and seeing it sort of all like that. It is very much like the craft beer industry, and yeah, I mean, it really helps. And once you get sort of switched onto that sort of thing, you tend not to want to go back.
Yes.
So, you know, if you start drinking nice kind of local American pale ales and things like that, then you're less happy with a can of Foster's. Which is sort of how we would kind of, yeah, position ourselves, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and another thing that sort of is key to like the whole Small Batch model is customer service.
Right.
And the people we employ, you know, I mean, you can spend all this time working on great coffee and all of that, and, you know, and meeting your farmers out in Mexico and roasting it really carefully and training everyone to do it. But if you serve it, you know, with a surly attitude or without, you know, any care and attention, then that's going to stick in people's minds, and they're not going to want to come back. Whereas if it's done really, really nicely and with actual genuine friendliness, then that's what keeps people coming back to you.
And that's a great segue because into my next question, because the thing that I really like to explore, apart from great startup stories, particularly local startup stories, is I'm a real advocate for great service and great customer experience. I mean, can you talk about how the foundation of success is built on delivering not just the understanding the provenance of the coffee and being an artisan sort of or niche player, but also the delivering it with great sort of service? I mean, what do you do to ensure that you deliver that great service? I mean, is it all about culture? Is it about a training program? What is it, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of both. Firstly, you have to, you get interviewed before we employ people. You know, we try and employ nice people.
Right.
You know, friendly, passionate, hardworking people who are interested in coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the coffee's pretty cool these days, and Brian's a pretty cool place, and there's lots of young people who are interested in becoming baristas and finding out more about coffee and that sort of thing. So that's great.
Yeah.
You know, you can have that side of it, but we also, it is about just having a culture of friendliness. It's not like a Disney store policy that it's like you must greet everyone as they come in, but it's just like, well, that's just good manners. You know, we hope it sort of comes as a natural thing. And, you know, when people get to know their local small batch coffee company, we've got quite a lot of stores now down in Brighton, and people have their favorite shop. And if you go to a shop regularly enough, then the people who work there will get to know your name. They'll remember your drink, and we don't have all that sort of stuff written down anywhere. And don't say, right, you must try and remember someone's name and try and remember their coffee. But it just gets that way, like a local pub, I suppose, or something like that.
And do you think that when you say open up a new store, do you get when you hire the new people for the new store, do you get them to come and work in existing stores so they get to understand it first and before you transfer them into the new stores? Is that how it works?
Sometimes, depending on when the shop's going to open, when they're available.
Right.
You know, I mean, we often have to move staff around when people are sick or to cover shifts here and there. And the most recent shop we opened, the manager and the assistant manager worked in for small batch already.
Right.
But the rest of the team were all new, and hadn't worked in any of their shops. But they're all, almost all of them are still there, and they're great. They're a really lovely team. I think by that point that was our fifth shop, I think.
Yeah.
And we were quite worked out what the sort of a good dynamic for staff and for a team of staff would be. So, we kind of recruited on that basis of people that we thought would work well in that location. It's just about getting nice people in, really. You know, anyone, you can teach anyone to make a cappuccino.
Yeah.
And as long as they're interested in the coffee, then you just have to be a nice person and prepared to put in the hours. You know, the service industry isn't a 9-to-5 37 and a half hour a week gig. It's long hours standing on your feet. So, you just need to employ people who are prepared to do that, I suppose.
Excellent. Now, also within the kind of the big chains and on many other sort of retail sort of outlets, customer loyalty apps and cards and programs and all of that sort of stuff has been around for a while and seems to be a staple of particularly some of the big chain coffee shops. I mean, do you run a scheme?
We've got an old school loyalty card system. You've got a card, collect 9 stamps, and get your tents for free.
Yeah.
And we've had, I've had meetings with people making loyalty apps, and it's just not felt that compelling for us to spend money on it. You know, we're not great at data capture, I'll admit, but we're not that interested in data capturing the people who we already serve. I don't know, maybe there may be some use to it that I'm yet to see, but it really didn't compel us. I mean, we're getting more tech these days. We've got a new iPad-based till system, which we're rolling out currently, which, that's pretty futuristic for us.
Yes.
So it might be something we look into in the future, but yeah, I mean, it's not. It's just not high on the priority list, I guess.
I see. Do you think you're sort of more comfortable rather than ever kind of going down the data capture and analytics and all of that sort of like stuff that goes around sort of the technological applications that come with a lot of loyalty applications? Is your belief based on if we just provide great service and great coffee from great people, that actually that's the basis of our loyalty?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, that's the basis of any successful service business, I think. And, you know, I mean, for lots of people, those bells and whistles are useful, but we haven't decided to go down that route yet. I mean, in terms of data capture and all of those sorts of things, that's something we'd like to focus on our online sales. You know, we sell coffee online all around the country. We have coffee subscriptions and all of this sort of stuff. And these are people who, you know, we've reached by very different means, and it'd be nice to find out how we did reach them. But people going into a small batch shop, you know, you've already got them. And we don't desperately need to know that they bought a cappuccino and a croissant.
Yes.
You know, and we don't need to then go, hey, you know, send them a message going, like a cappuccino? How about trying this? You know, that's not the small batch way, I guess.
Yeah, okay. The other thing we were talking about as well when we met was that, because you talked about service and then you also talked about the online element and, you know, how you'd grown the business from pretty much zero marketing kind of budget and had used almost let the service and experience and the quality of the coffee and the people sort of precede you. But also you talked about how you found it, the channel, particularly sort of Twitter and Facebook and things, a really good channel for responding to queries and questions, and, you know, as a channel to provide service through, like social customer service, if you want the industry parlance, I guess. I mean, can you tell me a little bit more about that and your approach? Is it just as simple as be friendly, or do you have rules in terms of how you do that?
Well, I mean, rules, we don't. We try to respond to all social media interactions if it's suitable with, you know, either a reply or a retweet if it's something we really like. And, you know, for bad stuff, you always have to respond. And I mean, there's several of us who get Twitter updates on our phone, so we tend to catch most stuff. And
right.
But, you know, for complaints, it's really good. I mean, it's not great when you get up in the morning and someone's complaining about something, and they're sort of, you know, the tone is difficult to... it's difficult to get tone right on Twitter, I'd say.
Yes.
You know, a misplaced exclamation mark or emoticon, I hate that word, can read very differently to different people. And someone who's actually just trying to, you know, let you know about something can come across as sort of shouty and complainy. And you know, I really love this company. I've seen it grow from nothing to what it is. And you know, you take it kind of personally sometimes. Yes. But then, you know, but it's actually really great to have that immediacy and you can respond straight away. But we tend to, you know, try and ask people to email or direct message stuff, not just to keep it kind of behind closed doors, but just because, you know, you can actually get a detailed explanation of something in an email, and, you know, you can respond, and it often turns what was a bad customer service experience into a good one, because people realise that you do care about what they think and, you know, what customers feel, and you know, we do want to know about any bad experiences, or if we get a couple of things about a certain shop or location saying, you know, the coffee's not quite as good, or it's an easy way for kind of identifying that there might be a problem there, or someone might need a bit more training, or, you know, perhaps even sometimes it's down to, oh, the water filter on that machine needs changing or something like that. So, you know, it's great for that kind of immediate feedback from a sort of a remote location.
Yeah.
And it's all free. So, you know, it's just really helpful.
Excellent. Now, the other thing that you said, which was, which I wanted to ask you about, which chimed with me, because I was speaking to a group of businesses yesterday afternoon, and particularly about social media and marketing and service and responding to sort of negative comments or complaints and stuff. And you just said then that, you know, you don't want to start your day with a negative, with a complaint or a negative comment and things. But you did say that you always respond to those ones. Can you tell me why you think it's important to always respond to those ones?
Well, I think it's, if someone's being motivated to actually complain,
mm-hmm.
you know, then they probably feel relatively strongly about it.
Yeah.
And you just want to make people happy, I guess. I mean, you know, we do really care about the company, and we, you know, by and large, most of the feedback is great, and you know, people saying that we're doing a really good job, and that's lovely to hear because we do try hard at it. But when it does fall short, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's really important for us to respond to that and to try and make that right, because I mean, you find a lot of kind of in the coffee world or in the bar world, trying to be cool, and there can be, you know, you get a lot of attitude, and that's really completely anathema to the way that we want our company to work. You know, if someone wants, you know, extra hot decaf soy coffee, then they can have an extra hot decaf soy coffee, and no one's gonna, we're not gonna sneer at them. Or, you know, if someone wants a flat white but only with half a shot of coffee in it, then just make it for them. Don't try and lecture them and say that's not what it should be, you know. So I think it's just polite as well. You know, if someone's got a problem with, sure. we're in service. So, and you know, as they always say, you know, bad customer service spreads 15 times quicker than good customer service. It's, you know, people do like to moan, but also, you know, we're British, so think about all those people who are too polite to actually complain about things.
Well, indeed.
You know, so,
indeed. I mean, do you think that the also that, you know, sometimes it, like you say, like bad customer service spreads kind of 15 times faster than good customer service. Do you think that also that because you're doing it publicly, how you respond to a negative complaint, it's just an opportunity as well to actually show how you really are and how responsive you are, and actually what the company's all about? Because I think that's one of the things that people have got to, many businesses have got to still get, as it were, that actually and a complaint can be an opportunity rather than it just being kind of, it feel like an attack, as it were.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and I mean, the whole tone of our kind of brand social media voice, God, that sounds awful, is quite fun and playful and irreverent. So, you know, when there is a complaint, it does sort of, it can bring that tone down, but you know, you shouldn't have just be, oh, really sorry to hear that. Send me an email and I will try and make it up to you, kind of thing. You know, it's like, it's pretty straightforward, really. I mean, for us, because, you know, we're not providing someone's electricity, which is being cut off, or, you know, it's not someone's Christmas shopping that hasn't arrived. It's a cup of coffee usually. So
yeah,
it's not the end of the world. And so, you know, so that approach might, you know, that sort of slightly, you know, slightly more carefree approach might not work for some businesses if what someone's complaining about is a bit more serious than their latte being too hot. But, you know, it's important to do it, and it's always important to be polite. You know, I mean, I really love those sort of, you know, BuzzFeed links of social media customer service stuff gone wrong, and, you know, when people try and respond in a kind of, you know, rude and aggressive way. You know, that's just not how you do it. You know, it doesn't make you look clever. It just makes you look stupid.
Yes, exactly. And so, what would you say to somebody that, I mean, also given that you've, like you explained, you've grown the business, but, you know, with very, very little kind of marketing budget, and you've done a lot of it on the back of your own sort of efforts and initiatives, the team's initiatives and things. I mean, what tips would you give for other people that might be in sort of a similar sort of position, or possibly one step behind you, and they want to grow their business, and for them to get the most out of one sort of service via social media, but also just generally marketing by social media? What would you say to them to focus on?
Well, I would, you know, look at anyone that you kind of are trying to be like, you know, people relevant in your field and that you like, and not so much copy them, but just see how they're doing it. I suppose, you know, get in touch with, you know, follow as many relevant people as possible, and follow people back as well, you know, and that sort of thing, because I don't know, and I mean, all different platforms are good for sort of different businesses. You know, we focus on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. They all integrate really well with each other. So, you know, I'm pretty keen on that sort of stuff. But just try and enjoy it, because if you're going, you should engage with social media because it's free.
Yes.
You know, and you can. I mean, you can waste a lot of time doing it, but you know, I would certainly put a little bit of time and effort into it.
Okay.
And speak, you know, try and speak to people who know about it. You know, it's I think it's something you were saying at the Chamber of Commerce is just giving their sort of experience and knowledge away for free.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, people are prepared to do that, you know, and it's just, that's just the case of having a 10 or 15 minute chat. But yeah, you just try and enjoy it, because you've got to you have to use it.
Yes.
And you're going to have to use it pretty regularly. So if you can make it fun and not part of your day, you're like, oh God, I've got to deal with, you know, social media. You know, you've got to just be positive, I think. And it's a great tool. It's not the be all and end all.
No.
You know, and it's not the only way of getting yourself out there. But it, you know, we've picked up great customers through them finding us online. So, you know, on Twitter and on Facebook, and just get involved, really.
Get involved and then learn as you go, I guess, and ask for help.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. People are always prepared to help.
Fantastic. Now, my final question, and is always this, is apart from world this is my penultimate question, actually. Apart from world domination, what's the plans? What's the future plans for small batch coffee?
Well, it's difficult to say, really. We've got quite a lot of shops in Brighton.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've dominated our market here and have faced the occasional bit of online flack, you know, when we're opening a new shop and people sort of can be like, oh, don't you have enough shops? Aren't you putting enough money? Well, no, we actually opening shops in places that are unsuccessful businesses and, you know, creating jobs in a downturn market that people enjoy. And we sell coffee that, you know, gives people in the developing world a real chance. But anyway, I think we want to just keep growing the wholesale side of stuff, I think, a lot. You know, we've got some really great wholesale customers around the country, but could always do with more. And our online coffee sales as well. I am biased, but I drink it every day. We sell really great, good range of different coffees to customers all over the country. We've got a great subscription service where you just, you know, you pay up front and every 2 weeks you get a bag through the door with tasting notes and information about the farm, all written by our master roaster, Al. And I think those are the real focuses now. But also, you know, just making sure that whatever we do, we make sure we do it well and do it better. You know, we've got a lot of shops, but you know, we're going to refurb one of them in autumn, and just making sure that it's fun and everyone's having a good time, I think.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like you're having fun already, which is fantastic. Fantastic news. And so my final question is this. Is there anything that you, apart from what you've just said, is there anything else that you'd like to shamelessly plug?
Well, we've got a really, really great film,
right.
The Origin,
okay,
which was shot out in Mexico and in Brighton earlier this year. And it's on our homepage at smallbatchcoffee.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not just a really beautiful piece of filmmaking from local film company Fat Sand Productions, you know, who are really great guys, but it explains the company and our sourcing model and think of Muxbal in Mexico where it was shot. Is just one of the best coffee farms, you know, that we've ever come across, and mm-hmm. it explains the whole, you know, the people at Small Batch better than I ever could. And it's only 6 minutes long, and I just want as many people to watch it as possible. You know, every time I watch it, I'm filled with pride, and it's like we just want more and more people to see it, not just for the great exposure for us, but for the great exposure for the concept of specialty coffee. You know, it's a real kind of old school way of trading. You go directly to a farmer and buy his stuff off him at a reasonable and, you know, fair price, so that he can support his workers. And I know that sounds sort of very kind of pompous and high-minded in a way, but it's just, it's simple, and it's just the way that I wish, you know, the whole world worked, really.
Well, I mean, that's brilliant. Yeah, I completely agree. And what I'll do is I'll make sure this all gets linked up, and I'll put a link into the video if I can't embed it on the actual post itself.
Oh,
but Nick, that's brilliant and interesting. And I'm sure there's all sorts of insights in there that other small business entrepreneurs or niche entrepreneurs will find really useful. And so I just want to say thank you for your time today. That's been fantastic.
All right. Thank you very much, Adrian.